This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
So I had to carry my baby in my hand to run away during the night around 2 o'clock midnight because it was just like we are in a war zone.
That's a Malawian national, Kenya's Banda, talking about xenophobic attacks in South Africa. Details coming up. Also, Zimbabweans are paying their respects as the body of former President Robert Mugabe lies in a state at a Harare stadium. And the Red Cross says a decade of war in northeast Nigeria has torn apart thousands of families. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo say part of a freight train derailed before dawn today, killing at least 10 stowaways and possibly more than 50. Rescue workers were en route to the site amid reports that survivors might be trapped underneath the stricken cars, which crashed some of the victims. The governor of southern province of Tanganyika said 10 people were killed and 30 injured in the accident near the town of Maibaridi. The Minister for Humanitarian Action earlier put the death toll at 50 and said he was trying to reconcile the figures. Cause of the derailment, which involved two or three cars, was not immediately known. The cars that did not go off the tracks headed to the town of Kalimi. Railways in the DRC have a poor record for safety, hampered by derelict tracks and decrepit locomotives, many of them dating from the 1960s. The National Rail Company, SNCC, is on the brink of bankruptcy. A series of attacks that erupted in South Africa have faded in the past few days, but there are fears the violence threatens inter-Africa trade. A sharp drop in truck traffic between Zimbabwe and South Africa may be the first sign of that risk. As Adigando reports, foreigners and foreign-owned businesses were attacked in several locations in South Africa, and people in several countries have launched reprisal attacks on South African businesses.
South African police say more than 700 people have been arrested for a range of crimes, from vandalism to murder, during this month's outbreak of what appears to be anti-foreigner violence. Business people around the continent are beginning to worry the violence could damage African trade. The South African research organization Trade Law Center says the country exported US $25 billion worth of goods to the rest of Africa last year and imported goods valued at $11.5 billion. Yet, Human Rights Watch says close to 200 foreigners, most of them truck drivers, have been killed in South Africa since March 2018 in what appears to be xenophobic attacks. Stanley Muluka is the president of the Southern Africa Development Corporation, SADC, Cross Border Truckers Association.
The violence in South Africa has greatly, you know, affected our business negatively. Our trucks cannot go into South Africa and pick up end loads. Neither can they even go to offload for fear of being attacked by these people who are perpetrating violence. Therefore, our business has been negatively affected. The transport sector is the backbone of the economies, and therefore an attack on the transport sector is an attack on the economy of the region.
Zimbabwe revenue authorities indicate the number of people crossing into South Africa plunged 76% last week as the attacks ramped up to about 9,400. The week before, almost 40,000 people headed to South Africa. Over the same period, the number of trucks going to South Africa fell by 25% to just over 1,900, down from 2,500. The number of trucks coming from South Africa fell by a third to 1,455 from 2,155. The violence has caused the rift between South Africa and Nigeria, which summoned Pretoria's ambassador. Abuja also arranged for more than 600 Nigerians to be repatriated. Nigerian National Bureau of Statistics figures show that South Africa is one of Nigeria's top five export destinations. Nigeria economic analyst and journalist Mike Odelahunter says the economic ties between the two nations are extensive.
There are over 120 South African companies in Nigeria. Now, top of this is the MTN. The MTN is the sixth or seventh largest telecommunication network in Africa. The MTN has about 233 million subscribers. Now, Nigeria alone has over 63 million subscribers in Africa. The MTN Nigeria is 73% owned by South Africa. 90% of the revenue that MTN Nigeria is making goes back to its parent body in South Africa.
According to the Trade Law Center, in 2016, South Africa exported goods worth just above US 438 million to Nigeria. It imported more than US $2 billion from Nigeria, chiefly crude oil. Odelahunter thinks the current dispute does not augur well for business relations between the two countries. He says inflammatory remarks by high-ranking government officials are not helping the situation.
South African Minister for Foreign Affairs came out to say there is nothing like compensation, and she went ahead to say some Nigerians in South Africa are actually drug pushers.
South Africa has attracted economic migrants from around the continent, with most coming from neighboring Zambia, Lesotho, Mozambique, and Zimbabwe. But others are from as far away as Nigeria and Somalia. The country has also drawn immigrants from China, Pakistan, and India. The violence reportedly began after a foreigner was accused of a crime. In the days that followed, hundreds of foreign-owned businesses were attacked, many of them Nigerian-owned. Many South Africans blame Nigerians for some of the country's crime. However, South African police say much of the violence appears to have been general criminal activity. Of the 12 people killed in the past few weeks, 10 were South African. Some of those opposing migrants in South Africa say they are taking jobs in a country with a 29% unemployment rate. Many South Africans say foreigners often accept less pay for menial work, pushing local workers out of the market. Government officials such as its ambassador to Ghana, Lulu Ntsimwana, are on record saying that South Africa cannot employ everyone. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari plans to visit South Africa for talks over the crisis. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
Violence targeted at foreign nationals and their properties in South Africa has left hundreds displaced from their homes. Nearly 200, including children, are housed at the Solo Community Hall in Katlehong Township in the city of Ekurhuleni, east of Johannesburg. Tuso Kumalo visited the hall and files this report.
Children playing, mothers chatting with sad expressions on their faces, while fathers are likely silent or sleeping. This is the situation at the Zolo Community Hall, now home to foreign nationals who were driven out of the Mandela informal settlement by angry local residents early this month. Fabian Mayembiza, a 38-year-old father of three from Zimbabwe, is still struggling to accept that he is now a destitute and has to depend on the mercy of well-wishers. He rejects what he calls lame excuses given by the locals for chasing them away.
They come to us and they said, we don't want foreigners here because you cause the problem as a foreigner. So we ask them, what problem we cause here? Because you took our wives, you took our job, and you do nothing here.
50-year-old Polite Moyo, a mother of three from Zimbabwe, had been staying in the Mandela informal settlement for the past 4 years. One morning, she was told she and other foreign nationals in the area had 3 hours to leave or else lose their lives. seeing that locals were already gathering in the streets, ready to attack those who disregard the order, she ran, leaving behind all she had worked for. She says she has no doubt that her property was looted as soon as she left.
No foundation at all. No foundation. I have got no foundation. I lost my life here.
Malawian national Kenya Spanda says the trauma he experienced on the night he escaped the angry residents will haunt him for life.
I'm a married man. I've got a wife and a 6-month-old baby. So I had to carry my baby in my hand to run away during the night around 2 o'clock midnight, because it was just like we are in a war zone.
Others weren't able to escape. Isaac Sithole Mabandla from Zimbabwe was cornered by the locals while trying to run away. He was beaten to a pulp and burnt to death, one of the 12 people who have died in the violence. Hundreds of foreign nationals who are now fearing for their lives have asked their embassies to repatriate them back home. A Nigerian national who asked to be identified only as Nicholas was in the first group of Nigerians to leave South Africa.
It's better I rather die in my country than die in your South Africa country. Like, if I'm crazy. I'm not crazy, man. They're taking like people that doesn't go to school. I'm not happy with the way South Africa are treating us. Like, they are treating us bad. I lost my cars. I lost my shop. Even, I lost everything.
The government has condemned the attacks and vowed to bring them to an end. Hundreds have been arrested. However, for most of these foreign nationals, this is too legally too late. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
17 past the hour, you are listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Zimbabweans are paying their respects as the body of former President Robert Mugabe lies in state at a Harare stadium and flags whip at half-staff across the nation he ruled for 37 years. The city has been quiet as Zimbabweans reflect on the legacy of the longtime ruler, whom some viewed as an evil, murderous dictator, and others as a revolutionary hero who stood up against colonialism. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Harare.
As Mugabe's body was transported by helicopter to the main sports stadium Thursday afternoon for public viewing, the facility was far short of its 45,000-person capacity. Many Zimbabweans, many of them out of work, told VOA they wouldn't go to pay their respects to Mugabe, who died last week at the age of 95. He was the first president of independent Zimbabwe, and until he resigned under pressure in 2017, he was the only leader the nation had known. In the heart of Harare, feelings are deep and mixed. 28-year-old Kelvin Sambana, who describes himself as a hustler, says he has no plans to pay his respects.
Why? Because Mugabe ruined our life, ruined our future. I am an educated person, as you can see. I have a degree. But I'm here selling cell phones, changing money, doing nothing. So why should I go to that funeral? He ruined my life. I can celebrate, yeah, that he's dead and gone. Gone forever. That's what can I be happy.
But things have changed. Under Mugabe, it was illegal to insult the president. Not that Ignatius Nyamunga, an unemployed 35-year-old who comes from the same rural village as Mugabe, would ever do that, he says. Nyamunga says he won't go to a memorial service in Harare on Sunday, but he will go home for the Sunday burial.
What the saying of saying, Afanaka, if anybody dies, he's now a good person. You can't talk anything bad about that someone. That's the thing. So regardless of the fact of his evil deeds, whoever is dead, whatever he did wrong, he's always good. He's now a good person. God receive him with open arms and stuff.
Mugabe is viewed by many as the man who liberated Zimbabwe from British rule in 1980. Many also view him as the man who drove the economy of this once prosperous nation into the ground. Teacher Judith Makuta, who is 55, says her feelings about the man are far less complicated. She says she will probably go to the memorial service at the stadium on Saturday.
I was in bed. It's unfortunate things were bad. He was a hero because he liberated us. So he was a hero.
And still others say they are ambivalent, like the 35-year-old comedian who asked us to refer to him by his stage name, the comic pastor.
We don't feel anything. Because I know why. Why should we cry? We are unemployed. 2008, people were being beaten on our face. So why should you cry? There's no reason for us to cry.
Instead, he invited Zimbabweans to do the opposite.
My best Mugabe joke is wherever we had elections, the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission would start by announcing results from the urban areas. They'll start like Harare Central Constituency, Tsvangirai, Morgan, Richard, MDC, 6,812 votes, Mugabe, Robert, ZANU-PF, zero. Then would go and go in all urban areas. Then at last they would go to Uzumba, Maramba, Fungwe constituents. Mugabe, Robert, Gabriel, 1,800,931.
The 34-year-old Tiko Kambara, who also calls himself a hustler, says the 1.5 million residents of Harare are more sentimental than they let on. He says they miss the man they called here by his clan name, Gashungu.
I've got a video which I took yesterday when people thought the body was going to his house. In less than 2 minutes, all the road was full of people cheering, Gashungu, Gashungu, Gashungu. Less than 2 minutes, the road was full of people. So I can't say the people in Harare didn't like him. When he's going to be buried in his rural area, there will be thousands of people, I promise you.
That burial is planned for Sunday. Anita Powell, VOA News, Harare.
The Red Cross says a decade of war in northeast Nigeria has torn apart thousands of families and has shrouded in mysteries, not knowing if missing relatives are dead or alive. Miners make up 60% of the 22,000 people registered as missing in what the Red Cross calls its highest caseload in the world. The aid agency says families in northeast Nigeria are often separated while fleeing attacks. Others have had loved ones abducted or detained and do not know their whereabouts. That causes constant suffering, including nightmares by parents and siblings. 2 million people are estimated to be displaced from their homes in northeast Nigeria. In Mangona, internally displaced Nigerians outnumber residents nearly 2-to-1. The International Committee of the Red Cross works with the Nigeria Red Cross and other Red Cross and Red Crescent societies to trace missing people by showing photographs, calling out names, and going door-to-door in camps and communities. Burundian refugees living in the Nyarugusu camp in Tanzania are no longer allowed to trade and conduct business in the camp, depriving them of their only source of livelihood. The decision to ban business activity in the camp comes as Tanzanian authorities plan to repatriate the refugees back to Burundi. As Mohamed Yusuf reports, some refugees fear for their lives.
George, not his real name, fled Burundi at the height of the political crisis in 2015. He fled to the Democratic Republic of Congo and later to Nyarugusu refugee camp in southwest Tanzania. He is one of 200,000 Burundian refugees the government of Tanzania is threatening to send home starting next month. George is afraid of what may happen to him if he returns home.
He says he was accused of not being a member of the ruling party and of opposing the party.
George is not sure how the same people will treat him when he goes back to the country. He also says he was accused of being traitor by providing information to human rights groups regarding abuses that were taking place in his area. If I am taken back to Burundi, my life will be in danger, he says. Witnesses say this week Tanzanian authorities banned refugees from doing business in the camp. Refugees see the move as a step in a plan to make life difficult, so they succumb to the pressure to return home. George says closure of the camp is a sign of things to come.
Mimi kukimbia kwangu kulikuwepo kunifuatilia.
On Monday, the authorities demolished the structures in the market. He says people are lost and they don't know what to do because they started closing the market in the camp. And tomorrow, they will close something else, George says.
Speaking in the camp last month, Tanzania Interior Minister Kangilo Gola said starting October 1st, all Burundians in the camp will be repatriated. He said the plan is to send home 2,000 refugees each week. Nearly 75,000 refugees have already returned to Burundi. 30-year-old Javier Emana Salvato, who lives in Mintendeli refugee camp, told VOA that if Tanzania is tired of them, they should be resettled in other countries. If they return us back to Burundi, we will die. We want to live in Tanzania. If Tanzanian government doesn't want us here, then they should ask for another place or another country for resettlement. Saif Magango is Amnesty International's deputy director in East Africa. He says Burundi is not a safe place for refugees at the moment.
The situation is still very difficult, marked by political persecution of people perceived to be opposed to the government of President Pierre Nkurunziza. So the situation hasn't improved as much as would persuade the refugees to opt to return home.
Burundi's political crisis, which began in 2015, has claimed the lives of at least 1,200 people. As Burundi gears up for elections next year, human rights groups have accused the government of committing abuses against its opponents, a trend that could cause Burundians to flee their country in large numbers again. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Smallholder farmers in Ghana are adapting drone technology for crop surveillance in a bid to increase yields and incomes. Farmers' cooperatives are slowly abandoning manual labor as they seek higher efficiency. Some, however, think the technology is too expensive and may shut out poor farmers. Sarah Kimani reports from Accra.
At the Kpom Irrigation Scheme in Ghana, 28-year-old George Majitwei watches as his drone is airborne and begins its first task of the day, surveying for diseases and pests.
The one we're using is a multispectral enabled drone, so that's specific to agriculture, in that it's looking for pest, disease, irrigation issues, that kind of deal.
His is among companies now sponsored by the Netherlands-based Technical Center for Agriculture and Rural Cooperation, an EU-funded institute, in a bid to attract more young Africans to agriculture. CTA estimates that digitalizing agriculture can earn the continent $2.6 billion every year. Giacomo Rambaldi is a senior program coordinator at CTA.
It's an evolving industry. It's a market which is still untapped.
While not all farmers can afford to work with drones and many fear they could lose their jobs to technology, some, like Apia Owusu, see it as a way of increasing yields compared to traditional techniques.
When you use the knapsack machine, sometimes when you are walking through the farm, you see the roots of the rice, when walking, your leg will be tearing it. But when you use the drones pass through the air, so you don't tear any of it. When you tear the root of the rice, it reduces yield.
Drones are just some of the technologies that delegates meeting in Accra for a summit on agricultural transformation in Africa are betting on to change the continent's food security situation. Sarah Kimani for VOA News, Accra.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable.
Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. Africa.